Today I want to talk about the subject announced, general semantics and the problem called stuttering, but I want to talk about it in a certain way. I've already told you that it was through my preoccupation with the stuttering problem that I got into general semantics. And I don't want to talk too much about the stuttering itself today. I'm going to assume that you know what I'm talking about when I talk about stuttering.
The conclusions, the generalizations, attitudes, opinions, beliefs of my parents, and especially our family doctor. I think he had a tremendous influence on what I thought about this problem. But I certainly didn't derive any opinions I had before I did research from what would be called an adequate examination of sufficient information in a disciplined fashion. This wasn't true at all. It makes you wonder, to what degree is this true of any of us, about any of our beliefs? I just want to say one more word or two that I think is important enough to say it. There's a great unevenness about the way society is patterned in the sense in which I am now talking. There are some kinds of beliefs that are almost universal. It seems to be almost universally true in our culture, and I think this means probably world culture. I think so. I have limitations of my information here, and I assume you know that. But if you don't, let me emphasize it. There is something, therefore, that I think can be usefully called folk thinking. And I've mentioned this before, but I would like to emphasize it with all of the emphasis I can give it. That there is a great deal of what passes for individual decisions, individual opinions, that appears to me to be a manifestation of folk thinking, a sharing of folk thinking. In the case of the stuttering problem, it's almost apparently a universal assumption on the part of people who have never done research, who have never examined quantities of information or even any information, but who nevertheless have theories. This is what is so amazing. They have theories. They have preferred explanations. And the preferred explanation, the one that is the most preferred as far as I can judge, especially on the part of people who have never done intensive research, is that stuttering is due to a physical flaw. But then I observe that this is an almost universal generalization about just about every kind of human problem. That the cause is located almost always inside the body. Somewhere. There is some something defective in the body. This appears to be almost a universal belief. And it isn't obvious at all why this is. It has a great deal to do with the way we try to do research on all of our ills, problems, and the way we try to deal with them clinically in hospitals, wherever we deal with them. And it probably is a tremendous source of waste economically, waste motion, wasted time, wasted talent. At least in this particular instance, if I am able to be at all a dependable reporter, and you must evaluate for yourself how dependable you think I am, I would conclude from a great deal of investigation that the stuttering problem couldn't possibly be accounted for on that basis. That if all of the time that has been spent down through the centuries treating stuttering as though it were due to a physical cause has been time wasted. All of the money that has been devoted to this has been money wasted. To say nothing of all of the effects that can only be counted in terms of heartbreak and disappointment. The way we think, the patterns of thinking of people are, I think, responsible in large part for the kinds and degrees of their suffering, as well as of their accomplishments. Another kind of universal, almost, no, let me start over, erase it. Probably the next most popular, but it's by no means universal. Probably the next most popular view of human problems, such as stuttering, is that they are symptoms of personality disturbance of some sort. Here again, you wonder how people come by this as a privately held conclusion, generalization. Very few indeed have done any research of this kind. In fact, this is just extraordinarily difficult research to do. Any that would test this sort of a hypothesis. What has been done that would be relevant in the case of the stuttering problem would lead me to conclude that you can't account for the stuttering problem on this basis. This is very sobering, so far as you take it seriously, and I take it very seriously. I think what I have just said is very dependable, but then you judge for yourself whether you think it's dependable. You go do research, you read. That is, if you're going to judge, prepare yourself to judge. Now, you have to wonder, to what degree are these two statements I have just made about the stuttering problem to be made about other kinds of human problems? To what degree do these two kinds of theories lie outside? To what degree do human problems fall between those and are not accounted for by either one? You know, it's a very sobering kind of question, because as you observe, the thinking of people who have not done research, who have not informed themselves in any systematic way about specific kinds of problems. They don't appear to have any other kinds of explanation, essentially. Unless you count the magical one, that things just happen. Some people are lucky and some are unlucky. If you call this an explanation, then, of course, that's rather widespread. Well, I think that not only are most of the problems that people have that are anxiety, tension problems, sort of like stuttering, more or less like stuttering. I think it is an example of a very large class of problems. Most of the problems that people have that are like that are probably learned. They're not taught. They're learned. Someone has said most of what we learn we're never taught. But also, I think it is the case that most of the thinking we do, we learn too. Most of the attitudes and beliefs and generalizations that we have, we've learned. And so, if you're going to try to test this point of view by gathering data, you will be essentially doing research on a learning process. How do you learn patriotism of the kind you learn? Under what conditions do you learn the feelings, attitudes, and the behavior patterns that you call patriotic, or that you call political, or religious, or educational? How do you learn these? Under what conditions? With what kinds of reinforcement, or you may prefer some other kind of theory of learning other than a reinforcement theory. But if you do, then that would need to be specified. As far as I can conclude from the research that has been done by myself and others on the stuttering problem, the way the behavior in question is to be accounted for is that it has been learned. Nobody teaches anybody to stutter, deliberately that is, but a certain number of children learn to doubt that they can talk smoothly enough to please their listeners, and they learn to take precautions to avoid the unpleasant consequences of not pleasing their listeners. And the reinforcement of this learning is rather complicated, I think. But one way to talk about it is this way. And this, again, I'm not talking just about the stuttering problem. I'm talking about, I think, a rather large segment of human behavior. If you have learned to expect trouble, as a stutterer learns to anticipate not being able to say his name, if you have learned to expect trouble, and as a reasonably intelligent person have learned to take precautions to avoid the trouble you expect, if these precautions you take in themselves constitute trouble, as they do in the case of the stuttering problem. The holding of the lips and the slowing down and the holding the breath and jamming the tongue up against the back of the teeth and the other things that you see stutterers do when they are trying either to go ahead and talk or when they are trying not to stutter, whichever way you want to word it. You see, they are expecting trouble and they are doing things so they won't have that trouble, but things they do are the trouble that they expected to have. And so, doing what they do, they confirm their expectation. And this is reinforcement. The next time, then, the stutter will be more likely to expect the trouble that, sure enough, he had the last time he expected it. This is reinforcement. This way he learns. Nobody teaches him, of course, deliberately, but he learns to expect trouble. Now, I think one has to, maybe doesn't have to, but I think that you can talk a little more effectively about learning in a case like this if you have a corollary to this kind of theory. That part of what we do because we don't know what else to do. Partly we do what we do because we don't know any better. I think we tend to underestimate ignorance as a factor affecting our behavior. If I don't know anything else to do except to hold my breath when I expect to have trouble talking, well, I'll hold my breath because I don't know anything else to do. And when you consider the possibilities available to a stutter, assuming that he expects trouble, assuming that he is concerned about having that trouble, assuming that he is reasonably intelligent, wants to avoid the trouble if he can, what are the possibilities available to him? It's an interesting analysis to make. And when you have made it, you're not surprised to see stutters doing what stutters do. There are limited possibilities. Until a person learns some new assumptions. If the stutterer can be taught what I have just been talking about, to look at what he does in that way, to talk about it in that way, then he may begin to see some new possibilities. The big generalization that he will tend to draw then is that trouble is what he has trying not to have trouble, and so if he wouldn't try not to have trouble, he wouldn't have trouble. And so he can begin to learn to talk without trying not to have trouble. And so he doesn't have as much trouble. Now this is reinforcing. The decrease in the amount of trouble is very reinforcing. He'll tend to do again what he did last time that made for less trouble. Once you get it reversed, it's very hopeful. Not that it's easy to reverse it. Because to reverse it, you have to change a person's way of thinking, a way of he has of talking to himself, if you please. And most people coming from the homes and schools and corner drugstores of our culture would not have it occur to them that this would be a way to try to solve this kind of a problem. And this kind of a problem is very common in our culture. A problem which consists of doing something because you're afraid of what will happen if you don't. This is a very common kind of problem. Of doing something because you're afraid of what the neighbors will think. If you look the way you look, for example. This is like stuttering. Anxiety about your appearance is more or less like anxiety about the way you sound when you talk. It's a very common problem. And I think almost all of the problems into which enter somehow insecurity feelings, feelings of self-doubt, tensions which are expressive of concern over such insecurities and doubts. Stuttering is merely one example of the millions of problems like this in our culture. So I think that there is a great deal to learn by almost everybody from examining real closely what it is we have learned to do about this stuttering problem. And what it is we have yet to learn, or the fact that there is much yet to learn. This might be very helpful to learn too. So you will listen in a new way to people with pat answers. Now, I don't have much time left. I can't get done with all I want to say, so let me just let myself have the luxury of not paying any attention to what's in that notebook. It's very hazardous to try to make a sentence that begins, "The most important thing I've learned from." That's very hazardous. But among the most important things I've learned from being a semanticist about this stuttering problem is that it isn't true that you can't change human nature. In any sense of these words that I think would have much practical significance. It seems to me that every day I see happening in front of my eyes transformations of people that are so great that if people can change in these ways, well, it shouldn't be too difficult to get rid of most of the misfortune in the world that is due to, let's just use ordinary English words, faulty thinking. We can haggle and haggle until we are all dead about whether thinking consists of something more than what you say to yourself. In the meantime, it's enough to work on what you say to yourself. And this you can do something about. And this is what it is that I work on when I try to help someone learn to talk better who stutters. It isn't so much what he does that matters. It's what he tells himself about what he does that matters. And I think that holds for everybody.